Carol Nawina Narinde of the Treatment Advocacy and Literacy Campaign in Zambia. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, TALC started off in HIV/AIDS advocacy, but moved into TB work. Can you talk about some of the lessons and the principles that you've brought from your HIV and AIDS advocacy into your TB work?
Okay. Well, like the name says, rightly says, Treatment Advocacy and Literacy Campaign, we're doing a lot of work around HIV. More like we're teaching people living with HIV on the basics of HIV so that they can well manage their illness and understand their illness. So what happens is most of the people that have HIV also have had TB. And then after they're cured of the TB, they forget about TB and just concentrate on the HIV because the medication is for life. But then when we started working with the Open Society Institute on TB issues, we realized that it would be good to go back to the TB issues and not just look at the TB issues as opportunistic infections, because there are other people out there who have TB. So now what we're doing now, we're doing the same advocacy that we did on HIV around TB.
And you're HIV positive yourself.
Yes.
And you have had TB.
Yes.
Tell us about your experience firsthand with the healthcare system in Zambia from diagnosis to treatment.
Okay. At the moment, we get, like for HIV, the treatment is free from the public health institution. So, for example, on a day you go to the hospital, to HIV clinic, we have the ART centers, you are tested, and if you're found positive, you're told to go back, after counseling, that is, you're told to go back while they do your CD4, then you come back after about a week or two for your results, and then they'll find out whether they're supposed to start you on treatment or not. Then if you're ready to start treatment, then you start accessing the drugs from the ART clinic. They'll put you on a two-week trial to see which combination suits you. Then after that, once they find that, then you start accessing your drugs from the ART clinic. And all the tests currently are free. The CD4 count and the LTF, the liver tests, all the vitals are done free. So you go there like sometimes every 3 months, or for the body checkups every month, depending on what test they are, but it's free of charge.
And what about your experience when you actually had tuberculosis?
Actually, the experience when I had tuberculosis, I had a bit of a problem, which is why I think we as activists in Zambia still have a problem with accepting getting IPT, that's isoniazid preventive therapy in Zambia. For people with HIV, there's a problem in diagnosing TB in us. So most of us have extra pulmonary TB, whereas when you're tested, they do not find the TB through the chest x-rays or the sputum. So which means the results will come out that you don't have TB when you actually have TB. I was tested, I think I had some like 4 x-rays in a period of about 6 months. They could not detect the TB. Then at that point, fortunately, I had a brother who's a doctor who just insisted to say, looking at the clinical signs, I think what you have is TB. And you should start on TB. I've had friends who've like gone for 3 years without having their TB detected until they got really, really sick. So I think there's a problem of detecting TB in people living with HIV. So for me, like I think I was lucky, I had a brother who's a doctor who insisted that I start my drugs, and I did take my drugs, and I didn't have any problems. I didn't default. I took them for 8 months, and I've been okay. That was about 4 years ago. I haven't had a relapse.
And for the people who aren't as fortunate to have a brother, as you said, who is a doctor, what are some of the problems that they encounter with the healthcare system when it comes to diagnosing and treating tuberculosis? And what are some of the ways that TALC is working to improve those healthcare systems?
At TALC, actually, at the moment, some members of TALC are being trained as paralegals. We work with an organization called Zaran in Lusaka. It's an AIDS law clinic where, for example, if the rights of the patients are violated, then we could like take it up on their behalf. Because maybe let me go a bit back to HIV. We have situations where a lot of patients like reacted to the D4T, the Stavudin, in one of the combination therapies for people living with HIV and AIDS, to the point where they lost use of their limbs. They would go to the clinic, like complain to the clinician there to say, I have this problem and I need to change this medication. Because we try to teach them on what we expect and what the side effects should be. A person goes there 2-3 times, and if there's no change, they'll come to talk, and then we'll try and sort of take that on with the AIDS law clinic. So with people with TB, like I'm saying, we've just gone into the TB section. So we haven't done that much work as yet, but I think we'll also take the same route as we've done for HIV.
Now, you are also on the board of UnitAid, which is a funding mechanism that gets its money from airline taxes. And in that role, you interact with members of parliament, potentially even presidents of countries. Mm-hmm. As a community member and an advocate for tuberculosis, what do you want them to hear from you?
What I want them to hear is that as much as we are grateful that they're giving us these drugs, and we are really grateful as the recipients of the drugs, I'd like them to know that there are people on the ground that are actually swallowing this medicine. Because I think there's one time actually I brought this up to the board. Most of the time they're concentrating on giving drugs to the countries, and these are second-line drugs. For one to go on second-line drugs, you have to be diagnosed. And most of the time there are no diagnostics in countries who have problems with reagents. So how are you expected to be, you know, to go on second-line drugs when you haven't had the diagnosis? So I would like what I do in the UnitAid is that sometimes things on the UnitAid board get really technical. My job is to bring them down to earth, to bring them back to say there are people actually taking the medication. Yeah.
So you talk about the ground level down to earth. When it comes to implementing DOTS or the Stop TB strategy, do you find that this information is actually there at the ground level?
It's for the DOTS. Actually, DOTS have done a lot. With DOTS, at least that is on the ground level, because most of the time with that, they use the home-based care people. These are people working in the community. These are people who go into the rural areas. They go to the clinic and they get the drugs. They go into the community and make sure that people swallow their drugs. So at least that at community level is working.
And you mentioned earlier the difficulty sometimes in diagnosis.
Yeah.
What do you propose solutions as well for how diagnosis can be improved? I mean, what are some of the ways that it can be improved?
At the moment, like I said earlier, we're trying to sort of look at laboratory strengthening. For us as activists, it's been very difficult, but that is one thing that we feel, as long as that is not put in place, even if we did bring more, there's a problem of healthcare workers in Africa, I'm sure you know that. Even if we did bring on more healthcare workers, as long as there's a problem with labs, then the healthcare workers will not be able to do their work well. Because like I'm saying, even second-line drugs, UNICEF is bringing on second-line drugs, but you have to be tested. You have to have certain tests for you to go on those drugs. So they could put in as much money as they want. If there are no diagnostics to put those people on second-line drugs, then they won't be, at the end of the day, there won't be any point in doing that. So for me, it's really the lab strengthening, because the lab, we're talking about using the same labs maybe for malaria, TB, and HIV testing.
And community health workers, what role do they play? How important are they?
Community health workers?
Yes. In terms of TB and getting messages out and helping people take their drugs?
They play a very important role, but like we said at one of the meetings that we had here, the problem is that they're always expected to do their work for free. That most of them come from homes that are, you know, very impoverished. They'll come get their medications and go into the community and work. They're willing to work, especially people who have had TB or people who are living with HIV and AIDS. They're committed to work. But then, like we always say, if they could be given a kind of stipend, I think they'll do more. Like, at the moment, you're also talking about task shifting. I think we had some meeting at a talk a week ago. Well, we're saying maybe certain tasks should be shifted from a few of the tasks that are done by the doctor should be brought to the nurse. Then the tasks done by the nurse should be brought to the healthcare workers, not just to, like, sort of lessen the burden on the doctors and the nurses. The healthcare workers are, like, limited to the community representatives. People living with HIV are willing and ready to do work like adherence counseling, and if it is possible, if they're trained in the basics, they could actually even do the testing. So at least that would take down the load from the nurses or the doctors.
And you presented earlier today on some research that you helped conduct that sometimes these community health workers are not always accepted because they're not actually medical professionals. So can you talk about how there can be improved communication and how these community health workers can actually be more accepted among whether it's government officials or healthcare workers themselves as a part of the team?
I think what I would say, like you rightly said, I did mention even today's session to say we've faced a problem where you walk into a doctor's office he's done his training, he's an expert. But what they have to do now is accept us people living with the disease as experts. For example, I'll go and talk to a doctor on HIV. He is a doctor who has read about side effects in a book. I have suffered several side effects. Like I said, I've had TB, I have had Kaposi's sarcoma, I've gone through it all. So it would be good if we can, you know, help each other. Let the doctors do their part, and they should learn to listen to us, whether they like it or not. The time has come when they should listen to us. Once upon a time, like when they get people to sit on these international bodies like UNITAID, you'd go there and sit there as a token, you know, that people would go there for 1 year and sit and not say anything. What we're saying is those days are gone. We want to learn. Like, for example, the SOC to be partnership. At the moment, we're actually asking them to train us. We want capacity building for us. And then sort of even help us with communications. Most of us don't have, like, maybe computers or internet access. That way we'll have more knowledge. So that at least at our own level, we'll not reach the doctor level, but we should also be, our capacity to be built to a certain level where we can at least, you know, communicate with the doctors. But whether they like it or not, they cannot run away from this. It's a time when they should engage communities at whatever level. Yeah.
There was a press conference earlier as a part of the union conference that talked about competition as opposed to collaboration between TB programs and HIV programs and how it's quite prevalent. Is that something that you've seen? And if so, how can that be improved?
We've noticed that. It's like people say, for lack of a better term, they say HIV work is sexy and then TB work is not. But in a way, I think it's this situation where TB has been like always kept as a medical illness and not like brought out to for the common mind to understand. So when TB people are talking about the TB work, the HIV people will say that is your work, and they you know, vice versa. So for now, for the problem that we have now of people having the co-infection, it is important that the two communities come together, because most of the time people that have HIV have TB as well. So whether we like it or not, the collaborative activities have to come together. That's where then they can help people. Because, like, I think you were at my presentation, you saw the slides that I showed. Here's someone who has extra pulmonary TB. They're already weak from the TB, and then they have HIV. You know, it becomes very difficult in the body of one person to have the two infections. So whether they fight or not, it is time that they have to come together.
Yeah. And last question for you. The global plan to stop TB that came out about a year and a half ago called for $56 billion over a 10-year period to help in the fight against TB. And two-thirds of that is supposed to come from high-burden countries. Do you, number one, do you feel like high-burden countries are contributing that much to begin with? And then do you feel like it's actually realistic to ask that of high-burden countries?
I think maybe they're not contributing that much, and in a way, I think it's not realistic. They could contribute something, I think, for them to take ownership of the programs. I think high-burden countries or low-income countries should contribute, because like in UNITAID, actually, we have 18 recipient countries that are also contributing onto the UNITAID. I think it is okay for them to contribute, but I think the amount is a bit large.
Carol Nowina Narinda of Treatment Advocacy Literacy Campaign in Zambia. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.